Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation, Kitten on the Keys. Today is dedicated to the 1920s jazz era for reasons you will soon discover. Play Broadway Rag. I like it better. It's a little too high-pitched for me. Don't worry, we'll get political. I guarantee you. I'm warming up. All right. So we're warming you up. Step into Savage's Saloon. And we will begin. We're going to begin with a story out of the Miami Herald today that I couldn't stop reading. I went over and over in it. Ponzi schemer Scott Rothstein gets 50-year sentence. Rothstein was convicted of running a $1.2 billion investment scam. The prosecutor asked for 40 years. The judge threw the book at him and gave him 50 years. It was a judge, James Cone, an Alabama native appointed by Bush, who was brought into Florida to give the disbarred lawyer more than what prosecutors requested for his crime as the mastermind of South Florida's biggest financial fraud. So he brought down not only his own family, but he brought down his 70-attorney law firm, Rothstein, Rosenfeld, and Adler. And you take a look at what this man did while he was making his ill-gotten gains. Held himself up as a wealthy, important man. Hung around with so-called society types. You know, the fake people in Palm Beach, the people easily duped by Madoff. He went to fancy restaurants, which he busted out, hung around with politicians like Charlie Crist, gave millions to charities, all on ill-gotten gains. Rothstein, born into a working-class Bronx, New York family, had fled to Morocco in a charter jet with $16 million. Last week, he wrote in a 12-page letter to the judge that he contemplated suicide but stopped himself because it would just be one final act of selfishness, blah, blah, blah. And so he comes back and he faces the music, and instead of getting 30 or 40 years, he gets 50 years. I kept staring at the picture of the wife and the mother. I couldn't stop looking at the women. I mean, the reason they were wrecked is that the gig, you know, the gig is up. Okay, it's over. All of the fancy, the manicure, the pedicure. I could have just seen these types. The manicure, the pedicure, the jet, the rose, the manicure, the pedicure. You know the type. And I just kept looking at it and looking at it and looking at it. Then this afternoon, I see a story in the New York Post. Underboss takes a courtroom snooze after son testifies against him. Legendary Columbo underboss John Sonny Francisci, once so feared that even Frank Sinatra kissed his ring, dozed off in court today while an FBI recording of his turncoat son was played at his trial. The son, in other words, was testifying against his father. Earlier in the day, the mob father and son came face-to-face in the Brooklyn courtroom where Francisci Jr. testified against the ailing mobster who was on trial for shaking down two strip joints in a Long Island pizzeria. In other words, the guy was at the end of his ropes, the old man, but the son turned him in. You hear this? The former underboss, who sat expressionless most of the time, pinched the fabric of his shirt as if to check the color. And so it's the whole story now. So I'm saying, what's going on in this world? Now, the end of the story is very interesting. A gangster son turns against the father. Almost unheard of. Incomprehensible. So I'm playing in 1920s music because this character, Scott Rothstein in Florida, reminds me very much of the character in The Great Gatsby, written by F. Scott Fitzgerald. The great character, Meyer Wolfsheim, who fixed the World Series of 1919, which of course was based upon another Rothstein, Arnold Rothstein. Arnold the Brain Rothstein was a New York businessman and gambler who became a famous kingpin of organized crime, the Jewish Mafia. Rothstein was also widely reputed to have been behind baseball's Black Sox scandal, in which the 1990 World Series was fixed. He notoriously inspired several fictional characters based on his life, including Maya Wolfsheim in F. Scott Fitzgerald's novel, The Great Gatsby. Now, just listen to the end of this entry on Arnold Rothstein for a minute. On November 5th, 1928, Arnold Rothstein was shot and mortally wounded while conducting some business affairs at Manhattan's Park Central Hotel. He died the next day at the Stuyvesant Polyclinic Hospital in Manhattan. The shooting was allegedly linked to a gambling event, right? He didn't want to pay the money he lost at the game, $320,000. He said the game was fixed. So they arranged a hit on him, and the hit was arranged to punish Rothstein for welching on his debt. Gambler George the Hump McManus was arrested for the murder, but later acquitted for lack of evidence. Now listen to this. Rothstein, on his deathbed, refused to identify his killer, answering police inquiries with, quote, "You stick to your trade, I'll stick to mine, and me mutter did it." So, in other words, the point is that in those days, a gangster had honor. He went to his grave rather than rat someone out. Now we have gangster sons ratting them out. In my day, Jewish men like Einstein were held up as role models. Jonas Salk was held up like a role model. And I search my mind and I say, all I see are Madoffs, Rothsteins, Bonnie Franks, Rahm Emanuels. Where are the Jewish giants, I ask? You know, we're very hard on Muslim terrorists, aren't we? And we're careful to say that the terrorists, while they are Muslim, do not reflect necessarily on the religion of Islam. And I would caution you to understand that the Meyer Wolfsheim character, the Scott Rothstein, although they are Jewish in name, do not necessarily reflect on the religion of Judaism or the Jewish people. On the other hand, we also see that the Catholic Church is smeared by the enemies of the Catholic Church because of the scandal of the molestation of some priests. We don't say all of Catholicism is bad, do we? But there's something connecting all of this, in my thinking at least. And that is, where are the giants? Where are the Jewish giants? Where are the Catholic giants? Where are the Muslim giants? Where are the Buddhist giants? Where are the Hindu giants? I don't see any of them. And I ask myself, what's happened to my world, the world? What has happened to all of civilization? Where are the great people of our time? I don't see them. I don't know where they are. Where are the Einsteins? Where are the Jonas Salks? Where are the great discoveries? Where have they gone, and what happened to our societies and our civilizations? It doesn't mean there aren't wonderful people in various spheres of endeavors, and there aren't great creative people, but the giants seem to be missing. Where are they, and where did they go? How did we wind up with Rothstein instead of Einstein? That's what I want to know. Why do we have Madoff and Rothstein? Why? Where does this come from? How does this happen? And why are they doing it? How have they lost their bearings and how have they lost their honor? Well, I don't have the answer necessarily. I guess I could write an encyclopedia about it. There is other news that I could talk about if you'd like. You want to answer that question, you can. Maybe you want to challenge me and say, well, Michael, here are the Muslim giants. Here's a Muslim who discovered the cure for polio. I guess I missed that in my reading. Or here's a Jewish giant for you, Michael, if you're looking for a role model. Here's a man by the name of X, Y, and Z who did Y. Here's a Catholic giant. You say Catholic, Italian, Catholic. The only one I could think of who I look up to, frankly, is Mr. Alito on the Supreme Court. He's a giant of a judge. He's a great prize to his people, you know what I'm saying? But I don't know where to turn with this. To be honest with you, maybe you want to talk with me about it. The Italian gangsters, the son turns on the father. It's unbelievable to me. This guy down in Florida, Scott Rothstein, what he did, what this man did, forging documents in various cases, forging judges' names. The man was a lawyer himself. He brings down his own 70-attorney law firm. And what did he do with the money? What did he do with the money? The usual, the Lamborghinis, the Ferraris, the Rolls Royces, 5 waterfront estates in Fort Lauderdale, one for Mama from the Bronx, one for the sister. You know what I'm saying? The big macha walks into a restaurant, everyone fell on their feet because here comes Scott Rothstein. Scott Rothstein, the great, great example. The great example. And where were all the people he gave his money to? All of the charities who kissed his behind. Were they in court when he was sentenced to 50 years? The mother was there and the wife was there. That was it. All of the charitable folk, to me, charities, by the way, most charities are Ponzi schemes unto themselves. I didn't say all. Most charities are Ponzi schemes unto themselves, where the operators of the charity live very royally, and very little of it winds up actually doing what the money's supposed to be doing. Incidentally, another scam artist for another day. So I've asked the question. There's also some interesting news. You got women winning primaries across the country, all Republicans, and the idiots in the media don't even report on it. Instead of reporting the sea change in California that Whitman wins and Fiorina wins, the local newspaper, the useless garbage newspaper, says Jerry Brown challenges Meg Whitman to town hall meetings. That's their answer? Now, I want to ask you something. They beat the men in the Republican Party. It's the year of the women all over again, only this time they're Republicans, so I guess their gender doesn't count. How many years have I told you that when a black is not a left-winger, he loses his value to the communists? When an Asian is not a radical leftist, he's never referred to as an Asian. When a Hispanic becomes a conservative, the Hispanic is of no value whatsoever to the left wing. He's not referred to by his heritage, and so forth and so on. So now we have women winning in California, in Nevada. Wherever you look, women, conservative women have won. And the newspapers make believe it doesn't matter because they're conservatives, therefore they lost their gender identity. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? It seems to me all of our civilization is either in collapse or upside down. And I blame it all on the media. I blame it all on the media. Every last problem we are facing in this country is a direct result of the vermin in the media. The twisted, sick minds in the media who have taken the prisms and turned them upside down and come up with a distorted Coney Island view of the world. Down is up is down, left is right, good is bad is good, cops are evil, criminals are good, the terrorist is a victim, the victim of the bomb is the real terrorist. Everything is upside down. The patriot is the enemy is the patriot, and we wind up with Obama, the alien in the White House. As a result of 40 years of twisting people's minds, we wind up with a man like Obama in the White House. But I don't want to talk about Obama. We know he's finished for now. The man has painted himself into a corner. He's been exposed as the king without clothes. The man is so clueless that instead of talking about the Gulf oil spill, I don't know who advises him, he starts talking about yesterday does a magical mystery tour about the health care again. He already sold that. He already beat people to death with it and pushed it down your throats with Nancy the Hammer. What's he going to talk about health care for? Instead of talking about dead birds. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Where are the giants? Where are the Jewish giants of today? Where are the Italian giants of today? I mean, let's be real here. You know what I'm talking about. I cringe. I read Rothstein. I read Madoff. I see Bonnie Frank. I see Rahm Emanuel. I itch looking at them. I itch. I ask myself, what the hell happened? Where's Einstein? Where the hell is Einstein when I need him? Where is any of them? Where'd they go? What happened? George Gershwin, Jonas Salk, Golda Meir, Edward Teller, Marc Chagall, Niels Bohr, Yasha Heifetz, Albert Einstein, Jewish giants. Look what we have today. Take a look what we have today. Scott Rothstein, Bernie Madoff, Rahm Emanuel. Yeah, I'm putting them all in the same category. Bonnie Frank, what, because they're in the government? They're honorable? Not in my mind, no. No, sir. I don't look up to them because they have power. The czars had power. The pharaohs had power. Did that make them good people? You know, there's a lot of blame for all of this. Did it begin inside the Reformed temples, the liberal Jewish temples? Did it begin in the Reformed churches? The relativism inside the churches, the relativism inside the synagogues that goes on today and passes for a gobbledygook religion? No reference to God, it makes them too uncomfortable? With no absolutes and absolutely no morality whatsoever because it might offend somebody? The Ten Commandments are laughed at. So you wind up with these people without a conscience. In any religion, there's something amiss in the world. So I'm asking you, where are the giants in any religion? So the you go into the logs down here of the judge. What's interesting to me is they brought in a judge from from Alabama, appointed by Bush, a real cracker. But he's got sort of, the judge has a Jewish name. The way it works is this. If it's a black criminal, they bring in a black judge usually. If it's an Italian criminal, have you noticed this? They bring in an Italian judge. Let's say they try to bring in an ethnic, let's say it's a Hispanic, they bring in a Hispanic judge. That's what they do. It's a very interesting thing that goes on here. So people can't say it's a racial thing. I've watched this for years. No one ever talked about this except me. You notice that? So they bring in a guy with a Jewish name who's as hard as nails, and he adds 10 years to the guy's sentence. He says, not only am I not going to be soft on you, I'm going to add 10 years to you. The judge gives this guy 50 years. The prosecutors only wanted 40 years. The defense attorney asked for 20 or 30 years. He gives him 50 years. They bring the mother out and their sister. They drag him out of there. Well, you got to read what the judge says. This judge was something. Finally, Judge Cohn spoke. He waxed poetic about Rothstein's case, saying that it was all about image, wealth, power, and influence, and that Rothstein rivaled Madison Avenue in the way he marketed himself. He said Rothstein's political connections stretched from the sheriff's office on one end of Broward Boulevard all the way to the Fort Lauderdale Police Department on the other end of Broward Boulevard to the governor's mansion in Tallahassee and down Pennsylvania Avenue to the White House, said the judge. He mentioned the society pages, the political contributions funneled through Rothstein's attorneys and their wives, his attending sporting events with big sports figures, all designed to create an appearance of legitimacy, but we now know it was all a facade, all a fraud. So he rips off people for $1.2 billion. You hear this? All the while, he's just making himself look bigger and fatter, and he started out as a poor schmuck in the Bronx. Allegedly, his father sold condoms in a tenement. You hear? It's a hell of a story. It's an American story, purely an American story.
Savage.
We are doing something odd today on the Savage Nation, which is, of course, something excellent. And that is, we're talking about a story out of South Florida. Ponzi schemer Scott Rothstein gets 50 years sentence, 10 more years than the prosecutors asked for. He was convicted of running a $1.2 billion investment scam. And when you look at the pictures of the mother and the sister, you just can't believe the pictures of these people. And what he did with the money and how he bought his, he thought, respectability. And the crocodile tears of the sister and the mother, oh my God. You know, there go the manicures and the pedicures. There goes the lording it over everybody. How does a person become this crazy? Before the spiky hair and foul-mouthed bravado, before the mansions, yachts, cars, and celebrities, before the crushing fraud charges and stark jail cells, Scott Rothstein was a curly-haired youth who serenaded a high school girlfriend with Beatles tunes. He was a very nice Jewish kid, cute, loved to sing, said Stacy Mahler Hayes, now of Long Island, the kind of kid you'd bring home to your mother. Once he became an attorney and he was trying to move up and he saw that money, that's when he really started to change, said Jay Ravidi, a plantation insurance agent who knew Rothstein during college. He was always looking for more. He wanted to make more money. Rothstein's beginnings were humble. The son of a salesman who specialized in condoms, I'm not making this up, I mean, this is a movie, and flavored toothpaste. Rothstein, age 47, moved in 1976 from the Bronx to Lauderhill, where his parents rented an apartment. Anyway, he was often remembered as a smooth talker with an irresistible patina of charm. You get the picture, right? How does he, I don't know, is there not enough for anybody? It's an amazing story. Let's take some callers. I've asked some questions. You have called in with some answers. Where's the question sheet I just put together? I already lost it. Who in your life is like Scott Rothstein? What is your worst nouveau riche horror story? I mean, that's, you know, I pioneered the horror story thing on radio. I did this. I started with airline horror stories in the 90s. But has anyone done nouveau riche horror stories? No. I just did it today. If you have a relative, if you have a boss, If you know someone who's a nouveau riche pig of the worst order, tell me about it. It's an amazing story. San Diego, Michael, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Michael, you want to talk about gangsters? I'm a gangster. Benny Siegel is my godfather. I come from Brownsville. I grew up in the, I was about 18 in the 60s, very early 60s. So I grew up through the late 40s, 50s, 60s. So let me tell you something about the gangsters and the Jewish gangsters of now. Well, first of all, I don't know of any Jewish gangsters now. I'm retired. You want to read about me, you read Sammy the Bull's book. I'm the guy that got him made, okay? I was his partner. Okay, so I don't know about Jewish gangsters now, but back then, what made Jewish gangsters and Italian gangsters and Irish gangsters, okay, part of the greatest trio that actually built this country, you understand? There was an honor system, a tremendous honor system. I used to sit in the house. My mother would have Murder Incorporated guys come in, okay? Gambino family. I was in the Gambino Gallo War. I was in the Profaci Gallo War. And these guys, when they gave you their word, they kept their word. Okay, this Rahm Emanuel, I don't even know what he is. He's some kind of generic Jew. Okay, let me tell you something. It's true, the story that Benny Siegel was going to actually try to kill Mussolini. He went to Italy, okay, and he explored every aspect of it. Mm. I knew Charlie Workman. He killed Dutch Schultz. Okay, I've known some people. I knew Red Levine. He killed Maranzano, okay? So I've known these guys all my life.
Michael, how old are you?
I'm 66 years old.
Well, you're not that old. I mean, you go back to now. You're born in 1943, right?
1944. I've been involved in organized crime since I was 12. My mother was queen of the New York underworld. I don't care who knows my name, but I'm going to tell you something, okay? Any Jew that voted for this administration, okay, made a sin under God, because when this guy was running, I says, this is the election that you're going to bet your soul on. And no Jew from Eastern Europe. Okay, I also was in Israel. I knew Meir Hatzion, with the Audie Murphy of Israel. Okay, these are real Jews. I knew the three Jews that killed all those SS guys in Dachau. They were on the kibbutz I was on, Gandafna. All right. So there's a difference between Jews now. This Murray Nadoff, to think he built his own people out of billions of dollars. This never would have happened. My people came from the Shtetl. Okay, they came from Russia. From Western Russia. As a matter of fact, 120 of my relatives were killed in one afternoon by artillery fire in the village that my great-grandfather came from in Russia. Okay, that's the village that the Belsen...
So you yourself are retired? I mean, basically, you're laying low? You're retired or what?
No, I'm retired. I'll tell you, I work for Nick Pileggi. I was the technical advisor on Goodfellas, on Casino. Nick produced a movie about me called Fatherhood, starring Patrick Swayze. That movie was about me. I'm writing a book right now.
Who's laughing in the background? I hear a laugh.
No, that's people I just passed. Okay, I'm in the car.
No, I'm real sensitive. You know, I'm like you in a way. I'm sensitive to background sounds.
Exactly.
You're good. You're very good, but, you know, someone could be pulling my leg, too, with this call. You understand that?
Well, let me tell you something. You read Sammy the Bull's book. I'm on page 96. I got him made. Okay? I made a war against the Colombo family.
Just Michael, let me ask you, I want to ask you a side question. You read about a guy like Scott Rothstein, a $1.2 billion scam artist like this. What is it that you think?
Well, you know what? These are scum. They prey on people. You know, I'm not going to say that I was a great guy. I mean, I'm accused of doing murder. I'm convicted. I'm convicted of that, too. I'm convicted of armed robbery, extortion, everything. But I gave it up. Okay, I gave it up to be creative, to try to do something with my life. So what do I think about a guy like this? This is pure scum, okay? And this Rahm Emanuel, I mean, he threatens a senator, a congressman in the shower. You understand? How could people stand for this?
I don't know. I don't understand. I mean, to me, the whole thing looks like we have gangsters running the country. What would you say?
No, you got scum running the country. I mean, these aren't gangsters. They're the vilest scum. Okay, of the world. I'm going to tell you something right now.
You're saying that a gangster has honor, is what you're saying.
In my day, yes. In my day, I grew up. Carlo Gambino used to come to my house. You know, when they accused Carlo Gambino of being too old at 68, he went out and held up an armored car. You understand? He proved who he was. These people don't prove anything. There's an old adage.
Michael, do you listen to talk radio regularly, or is this just a chance listening and call?
Michael, I listen to you every day. As a matter of fact, I called up last week. You wanted to make a comment about the Israeli raid on that boat. I stayed on the phone for an hour and three quarters of an hour, and you wound up signing off. And I guess, you know, you weren't taking any more calls. But I stayed with you. I'm a loyal listener, okay, and I like you. You got a lot of balls, okay? You're a good guy, and there's not too many people speaking up. I got 27 years in prison, okay? My uncle was on death row for 8 years. He was a murder incorporated. Let me tell you about prison. So you understand what's happening here.
Mm-hmm.
In prison, a guy will come over to you, and I'll give you a candy bar. Okay. Well, let me tell you. There was a guy in La Mesa prison. I did a year in La Mesa prison in Mexico, the most dangerous prison in the world. And I was there, okay? And it's right in Tijuana. And a guy came over to me one day. He says, "You know what? I want a dime from you." He was a Mexican dude. He killed seven men. And there, when they kill people, they do it stand-up knife fights. Okay, so, and I know the underbelly of Mexico. I'm a legend on the border, too. Anyway, he says, "Give me a dime," okay? I says, "I ain't got no dime. You need to get out of here." He says, "Give me a dime." I says, "I ain't got no dime." He says, "Give me a dime or I'll kill you." When he said that, I picked up a bottle of Mirinda soda. Spot. Because this is a prison where you can walk out of a room and get a gun. He wasn't leaving that spot. Now, what they'll do is they'll come over. "Hey, here's a candy bar." Or they try to pressure you. If you don't hit them and devastate them and take them out in the first swipe, then they're going to take everything you got. And they're going to try to have sex with you and try to turn you into something other than a man. Now, that's what's happening in this country.
People... Wait, hold on. That's exactly what's happening to Israel. Israel's being turned into a girly nation.
Well, yeah, but you know, let me tell you something. The real hammer of
God... Israel used to smack the Arab in the face with a broken bottle. He wouldn't take it. That's when they had a woman running the country. Look what's happened with these guys running the country. Tell me what happened to the nature of the Israeli, Michael.
Let me tell you what's happening. You got organizations like Reuters that blocked out the knife that guy was holding over that Israeli soldier. You got World Opinion. Okay, now you got one hammer of God, and that's Benjamin Netanyahu. And I know when they killed his brother, they did not increase his love for Muslims or terrorists. Okay, I know that for a fact. And you got one hammer of God there. You had Ariel Sharon, but he got weak. Okay, now Israel, that we're Jews, Michael. I know you come from the same background I come from, okay, basically the neighborhood set up, okay, so we know how things were when they were the right way, okay, and what's happening now, my people came from the Shtetl, my people, and that's one side of my family, the other side fought in every war in this country since 1876, okay, but what is happening to the Jews now, they're being pressured by, you know, they're, I'll tell you what the problem is, with Jews of this age, they want to assimilate. It says in Deuteronomy 7, we're not to assimilate, that we are a separate people. Okay, we're to respect where we go, but anybody comes in to try to take the country, the land that God has given us, we're utterly to devastate them, and we have the authority of God to do that, to kill everybody that tries to do that. Do not take their gold. Do not give your children in marriage.
How did you become... But wait, you're an anomaly amongst people even of your generation. You became a gangster by your own admission, a murderer. Where did you get that in your soul? Where did that come from?
Well, you know what? I'll tell you exactly where. That's an interesting question, Michael. Where I got it?
Because the reason I ask is there's a difference between very hard-minded, very tough, very uncompromising, and then crossing that line and being able to cut someone's throat with a soda bottle. I mean, where did that come from?
Well, I watch these cops come to my mother's house and get envelopes all the time. And city councilmen in New York City and Brooklyn, the borough president came one time. These are all thieves. You understand? That's how I grew up. I watched that. And I understand. Let me tell you the difference between tough and hard. You can get tough sleeping in the street for 3 weeks. That'll toughen you up. But hard,
right,
brother, I got 27 years in the worst prisons in this country. I'm hard. So there's no question.
Oh, wait, hold on. But you went in one way. A lot of men don't come out hard. They come out broken.
Exactly. Well, you know what?
What I'm getting at is, don't you think that this is born in you rather than something you learn? Because your brother could have wound up a surgeon, for example, instead of a gangster. How many stories my mother used to tell me, because we'd argue over this. Listen to this, Michael. I'd say to her one thing or another. She'd say to me, how do you explain that in the same apartment, in the same Lower East Side that she was in, one brother would be a cop and the other would be a criminal? How did that happen? She'd ask me, the same parents, the same background, because we'd argue over nature versus nurture. You follow what I'm saying?
Definitely. Let me.
So I think that you're in other words, the hardness was in you at birth. You were hard at birth.
Let me answer that question. Kings and killers are born. They're not made. Great kings are made, okay, great, because they step off their throne and they look in people's in the eyes. They don't look at the top of their heads. But killers are made. Now, you want to know the point, the validity of this question, of what I'm saying? I'll tell you what. 6 million mm-hmm. Jews went into the gas chamber. 6 million. Apparently, some of them were hoodwinked. But none of them took the opportunity to kill the last Nazi before they walked into that gas chamber. Just grab a pistol and kill him, knowing you're going to die anyway.
Right.
You understand? I got in a gunfight in Hollywood. It's a pretty famous gunfight, Gunfighter Producer Studio, 1978. Well, I got shot. I got shot 6 times by this guy, a movie producer. We shot it out right in front. People thought we were making a movie. I was looking out of the corner of my eye while I'm getting 9mm pumped into me. Okay? And the last bullet that I came out of my gun, I ran and I started beating this guy over the head. I was kidding, my jugular vein. I was dying. Okay, that's the difference. If I'm going to die, I'm going to take somebody with me. Now, what changed my life? I was in Corcoran. Okay, I had sepsis of the spine. Okay, I helped a guy escape out of Donovan Prison. A guy named Dave Finney. I got the warden fired. I did it for that reason, to get the warden fired. Anyway, what happened is, I was dying, okay, and I made a prayer. I said, Lord, this cop came in, and he started making me sit up. I had sepsis. I had such pain in my back. I had a few days to go. I said, if you ever did this to me on the yard, I'd kill you. But now I'm dying, so you're coming and you feed off me. He said, well, I said, but I'm getting out in a few days. He said, no, you're not. You're doing life. I said, no, I get out November 27th. He must have looked at the computer. I never seen him again. I was dying, okay? I made a prayer that night. God, please don't let me die. I promise on my soul, I will change my life. This is after 27 years of prison. Now I finally broke, just a couple of days after I had finished 17 years for murder, okay? I broke, okay? But I only broke. I said, I won't take any vengeance on nobody, and I won't do anything except...
Whoa. You said you broke? What do you mean you broke? You changed?
I broke, yes, I did. God broke me. God, Adonai, El, he's the one that broke me. He broke.
Well, it's an interesting use of a word, broke. Broke you. Why do you use the word broke you?
Because God comes to you. He sends people to you. If you don't listen to him, okay, he's going to find a way to break you. He's going to bring you to him. And be thankful he does, because if he doesn't, then you're lost. You go into Gehenna. And I know that. And this is the culture that I come from. This is the Jewish culture. Okay, listen.
Well, what do you do day to day in San Diego? I'm going to have to take a break, but I know that most people, I'm getting emails from people I haven't heard from for years saying, this is the most awesome phone call I've ever heard in talk radio. You got people on the edge of their seats, Michael, with your story, because we all know it's the truth. We know that you're not making it up. And there's something about the truth that is so remarkably attractive that people don't know how to stop listening to it. So please hold on the line. Maybe somebody can be saved from your conversation with me on this show, Michael. Stay in the line. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, it's another amazing day on the Savage Nation. I started by talking about Scott Rothstein in Florida, sentenced to 50 years for a $1.2 billion investment scam. And then I started asking, where have all the Jewish giants gone? Where have all the giants in any religion gone? And we were taking callers on that. What happened to our civilization? There's no honor anymore. There's no nothing anymore. And a guy calls named Michael from San Diego. He identifies himself as Michael Hardy, a man who he says he's been convicted of murder, 28 years in prison. And he started to tell things about his life that smacked of reality. And we couldn't believe it. Most of us listening to the show are awed by this call. And we're going to go back to Michael Hardy right now on the Savage Nation. Michael, I know that you have many people listening right now, and you ended the last conversation by telling us that after 28 years, God broke you. Could you tell the people what you meant by that?
Well, listen, God has always been in my life, okay? But, you know, and he's always been with me. I've been shot 11 times. I had a bomb.
Wait, when you say God has been with you, even when you were killing people, God was with you?
Well, he was with it. He was in my heart. Let me tell you, Michael. I was born into a war zone in Brownsville, okay? So I started out with the Profaci Gallo War. Well, I started out with gang wars when I was a kid in Brooklyn on Dead Man's Hill and Crown Heights. Okay, that's where I started out. I went to a school where the principal jumped off the roof. We went to see Blackboard Jungle, and I thought it was a musical comedy. I went to
Good line.
So more happened in a half a day in my school than happened in that whole movie. So God has always been with me, okay? But it wasn't. But listen, He wants you to pay attention to Him, and if you don't, He's going to cause you to do it one way or the other. If He loves you, if He doesn't love you, listen. He didn't like Cain, okay? Cain didn't make out good.
Well, you said you were in a Mexican prison. Was it a U.S. prison in Mexico where you cut the guy's throat with the soda bottle?
No, it was a Mexican prison in Mexico. Mexico.
You were in a Mexican prison in Mexico and you survived killing a guy with a bottle?
Yes, I did. I definitely did because I killed the guy who was a threat to the guy that ran the prison. So I wrote a book called Mesa del Diablo. And this guy, as soon as I did that, they never seen a gringo do this. They thought, like, I don't know, like I was some kind of, white buffalo or something, or an enigma. And this guy says, listen, I want you to work for me. And he let me work for him. And I made
Michael, how big a man are you?
6'1", 280 pounds.
Oh, so you're a big guy.
Yeah, they call me Big Mike. That's what I was known as. But I want to tell you something, Michael. You know, Sammy was my partner for a long time. When Jerry Capizzi was calling him a rat and everything like that, now, I got off the bus before I got to that stop, okay? Because
Mike, hold on, because I'm coming to a dead stop at the end of this hour. You said that God, you found God, you're no longer a criminal, and that God broke you. Amazing words. If you have the time and you care to reach a lot of people, would you tell the people after the hour what you mean by God broke you, what that means?
I give you my word in the name of God, I will do that.
All right, back in a minute on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation, and we are hitting all sorts of points inside your head today. Eddie, my love, I loved this song when I was growing up. Trying to study geometry while listening to this, forget about it. But I did it. I struggled. I didn't become a gangster. That's the difference, and that's what I was talking about before. How does a guy like Scott Rothstein, who was sentenced to 50 years today for being a Ponzi schemer in Florida, MiamiHerald.com, $1.2 billion investment scam. I couldn't stop reading this story for a million different reasons, and I'm still sorting out what's so fascinating about it. That this guy could bring down his family. He started out with a father who sold condoms and flavored toothpaste in an apartment building, goes to law school, rags to riches, and he ends up with a 50-year sentence for what he did. And I ask a question, how do people end up like this? Where are the Jewish giants? Where are the Italian giants? Where are the ethnic giants of any religion? That's where I started. And I get a call from a guy in the last hour who identifies himself as a Jewish gangster who was retired in San Diego in his mid-60s. He claims he was in prison, in and out of prison for 28 years. He claims he's convicted of murder many times. And that he says at the end of this long, his name is Michael Hardy. He's holding on the line. He's going to be back with us. He was mentioned in the book Underboss, Gravano. And he says that at the end of the day, God broke him and that he's a changed man. So I said, Michael, will you stay in the line and come back on the Savage Nation and tell us what you mean by God broke you? And true to his word, Michael is still holding from San Diego. Michael, thank you for being a man of your word.
How you doing? Thank you very much, Michael.
Now, Michael, I want to review because this is a new hour and we get all sorts of new callers. I know you told a lot of, you know, you told us a lot and it was captivating. Men of reality, whether they're good or bad, are very captivating. I've found this my entire life. I can't take people who BS me. I'd rather be alone, Michael. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I know exactly what you're talking about, Michael.
I mean, I'd rather hear a guy who was an ex-criminal tell me his life story than listen to BS from a guy who has nothing to say. Let me put it to you that way. So I know that what you were saying to me was captivating to me. I know millions of people heard it. Could you summarize in your own words what you said to me, and then we'll go into the God broke you thing? I mean, I'm not asking you to glorify your life. I'm asking you to tell the people what you said to me. You were in jail for how many years?
27 years in two different countries and five different systems. The Fed, the state, the Army, New Jersey, New York, Mexico.
But you weren't in consecutively. You mean in different times, right?
Certainly, yeah. Yeah, it's like a mosaic. But, you know, each
so, and you were describing the difference between tough and hard, right? And you're saying anyone could be tough, but being hard requires jail time. Isn't that what you were saying?
27 years, 28 years in prison with riots, race riots, killings, hundreds of killings. I was in Corcoran. They were betting on people, and they were doing that. They were betting on convicts, which one would win, and they'd shoot the loser. So, yeah, that made me real hard. And growing up made me hard in Brownsville, Bedford-Stuyvesant.
Yeah, but but Michael, you're only 66. There were other Jews who grew up with you who were smart as you, but they didn't go into the world of crime. They did it in another way. So how did you become a criminal is what I'm asking you.
Well, how did I become a criminal? I'll tell you. I watched the situation with my mother, okay? And I watched how everything is corrupt, okay? Everything is corrupt, and just you got all kinds of politicians.
Saying that your mother was, in essence, a funnel for money to corrupt politicians and judges. Is that what you're saying?
I would say that. I would say she was Benny Siegel's girlfriend after Virginia Hill in an interim. I'll tell you what she said on Geraldo, that she was raped by two guys in Murder Incorporated. She told Benny Siegel, and that afternoon they were both, she told them in Hollywood, that afternoon they were both dead in Brownsville. So, yeah, definitely. She was queen in the New York underworld. That's what the Times and the Daily Mirror, Daily News used to say.
But you were written up in the New York magazine back in the 70s, isn't that correct?
Back in 1977, yeah. I was written up.
All right, so we've checked it out. So this story is true, what you're telling us. I want people to understand we've done a little checking, and there is direct veracity in what you're saying. All right, so you're a hard man, you're a tough man, you're an ex-criminal, you're a murderer, ex-murderer. You've done every bad thing on earth, and you say that you come out at the other side because you beg God to not kill you when you had sepsis in your spine, right? Isn't that when it happened?
Yes, sir.
Now, when you say God broke you, did you have an awakening? Did God actually appear in front of your eyes in that jail, in that hospital?
I'm going to tell you something. That happened to me in Rikers Island years ago when I took my little girl. She was being abused in a foster home. But that actually happened to me. But that's a very heavy experience. But in the hospital in Corcoran, yes, I had a second. In other words, God, in a sense, God spoke to me, and he let me know, listen, you're headed for a hard, hard time, okay? Now, you got a choice now. You can either die in this prison, okay, or you keep having faith in me and I'll bring you through it. And that hard time, a couple of days after, I had the encounter with the CO, okay, who never came back to my room again. What happened is I was released. I had died that night, and the nurse told me she brought me back. A few days later, I was released to an ambulance. They brought me to UCSD, and with the great care I got in UCSD, in 1 year, I was there for a year, semi-coma, okay? I was there for a year. Had a doctor tell me that he'd give me the operation, but I was going to die anyway, and I told him, listen, I've been in hell that it burned the shoes off your feet in the first 5 minutes. I spent years there. There's nobody going to kill me before God. God knows when I'll die, not you, brother. He wouldn't operate on me. I'm not going to give you his name, let him go on his career. But anyway, yes, God came to me and spoke to me, okay? And believe me, he gave me an awakening. And he just told me, listen, you got to change your ways. This is a part of history. We don't have much time left, okay? Things are going to happen. There's a storm coming. If you don't prepare, if you don't maintain the greatest sanctuary, okay, against tyranny in the world and keep tyrants from controlling it, then we're going to lose it. This is the only way.
You're referring to America, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I am.
Now, so you're a man who was on the other side. You were in the dark side of things. And I asked you in the last hour, do you think that this country is being run by the same type of people who ran the New York that you saw through your mother's, the time of your mother? You feel that they're just as corrupt?
They're more corrupt because the guys that ran New York when I was a kid, they had honor. They might have done. Listen,
Michael, how many times have I said on this show, I knew that politicians were always on the take when I was a kid. I knew it. I wasn't shocked by it. But there was a line that they never crossed, and that line was treason. And I said that line has been crossed. They would all sell this country down the river today for a dollar. Isn't that what you're saying?
The fiber of our Constitution and democracy is entwined with treason at this point, in this day. It is. Treasonous acts from the government. People don't care. Do they think they're just going to maintain this country? You think that you... Look at those guys on Normandy Beach. God, if they could only knew what they were fighting for, they might not have showed up, Michael.
How many times have I said it? How many times have I said that they stormed the beach so that we could have Barney Frank in Congress?
Exactly.
They wake up and they look at the country we're living in. That's what they died for the freedom of having people putting bombs in Times Square and then being given a trial instead of being hung from a lamppost?
And then nobody knows. You know,
they died so that the Navy SEAL is put on trial for doing his job. They died so U.S. Marines can be given a court-martial because they killed someone in a shootout. What do you think about those trials of the Marines? You know how much money I've raised for them, Michael? You must have heard it over the years.
Of course I have. Of course I have. And I cry, please bring Harry Truman back. Where's Audie Murphy? You understand?
I don't know. I think if Audie Murphy came back, Barack Obama would try him as an enemy.
I'm sure he would. Anybody that's a threat to tyranny is definitely get tried. You know, got to get tried for sedition or something else.
You and I agree philosophically. So when you say you're broken, you say to God, "Save me, and I'll do what?" What have you done differently since that time, Michael?
Well, I'll tell you what. I've changed my line of thinking. Okay, I'm handicapped. I would travel around the streets in San Diego in my wheelchair. People treated me good. Real good.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I look at these people. These are the people. These are American people. These are good people. Okay? Who would want to hurt these people? You know, I'm not in the battle zone anymore. When you get out of the Army, you stop fighting. Okay? I'm not in that Army no more. I've been shot 11 times in the streets of this country. Okay? I've had 16 gunfights. I've been in two major mafia gang wars. And that's only on this side of the border. Okay? But I'm going to tell you something. When you don't need to do that, when you're not a combatant, then you look at you smell the flowers. And I thank God that I'm not here. You know, listen, I faced the gas chamber on my last case, and I beat three strikes three times by the grace of God only. And you know what? You don't have to be a fool to sit around and compliment yourself and say, hey.
Michael, if you have some young kids listening to the show before we go, let's say there's some gangbangers who listen because they're different than their friends. They would never admit they listen to Michael Savage. But they listen because they know there's something here for them. And they're as tough as nails. They're in the street. They're doing what you did as a kid. Would you say to them that it's the hero who puts the gun down?
Well, I would say that. I would definitely say that. But I'd say this also. When you see prison movies, you see 2 hours, American Me or whatever else the prison movie is. Okay?
Yeah.
If you want to go there, it's not going to be 2 hours. It's going to be millions and millions of seconds and minutes. Okay? Millions of misery. Packed time, okay, in a concentration camp setting where people concentrate on making your life miserable, okay? They concentrate on doing that, whether it be the guards or the other inmates. You walk out, you don't know if there's going to be a shooting. I was there when they fired 18 shots in Corcoran on the yard, okay? I watch people get stabbed in the mess hall. They start shooting the M14s. Bullets are ricocheting. This is a hell that I can't understand anybody. And you're not fighting for anything. There's nothing worthy. It's not like what Audie Murphy did. Killed, like, what, 160 Germans in 20 minutes? He did something here, okay?
Yes.
It's not that. You're fighting for nothing. For people, your homeboys, you ain't going to get a card from them. You ain't going to get a letter from them. You ain't going to get a grunion from them. Nothing. You're there alone.
Right.
Make the decision. Make the decision before you cut that line and wind up in the Colorado River on the greatest rapids that you could ever imagine, and you're probably going to drown in the mix. Make that decision. Stay home. Be true to your family. I met a lot of good kids in this system I just came out of. Good kids that are going to spend the rest of their life, because of three strikes, in prison. And they got a lot of good values. They just need a little turn. And I'm going to tell you something. They ain't going to get it. Because the biggest maggots of the system here are the California Department of Correction. They want three strikes because they want job security. Okay? So these kids that could do something, could be something, they need a break. You need to change some kind of learning system, whatever it is. Okay? But you need to reach people. Waste all this energy and spend all this money on prisons and not school and not religious training and take God out of the equation of this country. This is one country under God. And when you take him away, he's not above us anymore. You understand?
We lose our protection. Well, Michael, this has been a very a big, quick ride down the rapids with you. And I must say that I hope that somebody was touched by Michael Hardy on today's Savage Nation.
Thank you
for calling the program. I'll be right back. You know, many of us have heard the phrase from Isaiah, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares. I'm sure many have heard that in their churches. And they are spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. We've all heard of that. We've all heard it, and those are good words in times when you can trust your neighbor. If you were in Israel, would you beat your sword into a plowshare knowing that your neighbor wants to wipe you off the planet? I don't think so. But we're talking not today so much about swords and plowshares. We're talking about Ponzi schemers, governmental officials who are very much like Ponzi schemers. And we also refer to Isaiah, where he says, "In that day a man shall cast away his idols of silver and his idols of gold, which they made for themselves to worship." You don't hear that much anymore. "And I will give children to be their princes, and babes shall rule over them." Who does that remind you of? Who does that remind you of? How many times have I quoted Isaiah, where he says, "As for my people, a babe is their master and women rule over them"? If that is not speaking to you in America today, then what is? A babe is their master, and we're not talking about gentlemen's clubs, and women rule over them. We're talking about the Nancy Pelosi's of the world, who rule and take pleasure in ruling, take pleasure in beating people up, take pleasure in wielding a hammer and beating you into submission, using every trick and chicanery in the book to pass a corrupt health care reform bill that will bankrupt the nation. "Moreover, the Lord said, because the daughters are haughty and walk with stretched forth necks and wanton eyes, walking and mincing as they go and making a tinkling with their feet, therefore the Lord will smite with a scab the crown of the head of the daughters, and the Lord will lay bare their secret parts." What do you think this is all about? "The men shall fall by the sword, and thy mighty in the war, and her gates shall lament and mourn." Well, it's all very religious stuff, and many of you dismiss it at that point. You say it's just old, you know, poetry written by old guys in the desert, old olive growers who were deficient in various B vitamins, who had visions that were faulty. Many of you believe it. You just see it with a laugh because your minds are... You don't believe in any of this. You don't believe in God. You don't believe in the truth. You don't believe in the word of God. You don't believe that there is such a thing as the truth. Instead, you laugh and you mock everybody. In other words, you have become Larry David. You've become Larry King. You've become Woody Allen. Everything is a joke, right? It's all a joke, isn't it?
Savage.
Diddle-le-le-le-le.
Yeah.
Diddle-le-le-le-le.
Savage Nation. It's a mad, mad world. It's getting crazy by the second. I don't know whether it's a product of the media or the world is really melting down. It's hard to say. Is it because the media is focusing on things negative, including myself, a good portion of the time? Or is it the world really is going to you-know-where in a handbasket? You read the FBI paid money to Vandersloot in a sting, and he used the money to go to South America, and he whacks another chick. And you ask yourself, how does this happen? Who's in charge of anything? Ahmadinejad has given new sanctions over nuclear program. And Ahmadinejad, the Hitler of our time, says the vote against me is like a used handkerchief. Basically, I can wipe my behind with it. And we sit and watch. It's like watching Hitler all over again. It's history repeating itself. The man says he's going to get a bomb, and he says he's going to destroy Israel. And Israel sits there and does nothing. Nothing. Waiting. The guy's sharpening the knife to cut his throat. He does nothing. He waits for Obama to give him the right to defend himself. You hear this? A guy who won't even defend America. He's asking him permission to defend his life. You don't know how this could be happening. It's like watching a suicide in slow motion. It's like watching a nation commit suicide in slow motion. You know how many times as a child I look back and I said to myself, if I were able to go back in time, would I have tried to kill Hitler? Knowing I'd be killed if I got him. And I have to say, yes, my life would have been worth sacrificing to have killed Hitler, because my life is nothing compared to the 100 million people died because of that psychopath. Now we have the strongest military on earth with the weakest leadership in the history of the military. The strongest naval power on the planet with the weakest men running the Navy in the history of the U.S. Navy. I've never seen anything like this. I see young guys flying F-18 Hornets with the guts of a Samson, and they're not allowed to use the jets to take out our enemies while we still can. I don't understand what I'm living through anymore. I'm sitting here with suspended animation. I'm watching a country quaking in its boots while the medieval troglodytes surround us with knives in their teeth. The medieval troglodytes surround us, telling us that we have no right to be modern people. The women have no right to wear dresses. The women have no right to drive cars. The women have no right to read and write. And the women don't even stand up to them. The medieval troglodytes are brought in, and they have 16 children, and they live on welfare. And if you say a word to them, you're called a racist by the government, they put you in jail. There's a lot more I could say that I'm not going to say right now. I think I'm kind of sketching it out for you like a verbal, caricaturist. We're living in very strange times. Strange times indeed. And you have to ask yourself, when does it change? What happens? Where is the point at which the country suddenly comes back from this death spiral? Now, you might say that the women winning in California and in other states, Republican women, could be a good sign that the Tea Parties have finally had the effect. Never mind what the pimps for the Democrat Party on television say. The lowlife, You take a procurer of women on the lowest street in your town, and they have more honor than guys like Chris Matthews, in my opinion. How in the world can they get a job on television when they work for the Democrat Party? Right in their eyes, they see Whitman win, they see Fiorina win, and they say it's nothing. They don't count. They beat Republican men. I don't know, maybe that's the turning point. I don't expect miracles from them any more than I expected them from Scott Brown in Massachusetts. I didn't expect it because I watched too many episodes of Brotherhood on Showtime to expect more from a politician, a lifetime politician. Doesn't mean he's a bad guy. He's just part of the system. Anyone in part of the system is going to behave the way the system wants them and expects them to behave. Don't you understand that? So we see, well, they're outsiders in a way. Meg Whitman is an outsider. She's a billionaire who made her money on her own. No one gave it to her. I mean, think about it. So at least she can bring business sense to the office, all right? So let's see she wins. Let's see Fiorina knocks that hag from Brooklyn out finally. She can go back and run a girl shop on Prospect Avenue. She'd be better off than being a U.S. senator. Two Carvel stands she should have run in her life, Barbara Boxer. The most in my day a woman like Barbara Boxer ever would have had was a chain of Carvel stands. Two tops. Two. A senator for all these years. An anti-American, anti-military, anti-police senator. I can't believe it. So maybe we've seen a turning point, but we don't know it. We're too close to it. You know what I'm saying? Maybe we've seen the turning point, but we don't know it. So I have no further comments to make, Your Honor. But I would like to say in my closing argument that we are living in strange times. When we could have a man without any experience whatsoever, with no known background whatsoever, be foisted upon us as president, Your Honor, and show one incompetence after another, Your Honor, and continue to get away with it, Your Honor. It's incomprehensible that a nation of educated morons would not see what's going on right in front of their eyes. Even the fable, The King Has No Clothes, which was written in about 1815, talked about Obama. The Obama of his time was probably the king of his country. So history is repeating itself. You know, women rule over them and a babe is their master was written about in the Bible. And the people sit here and they say, oh, no, it's not true. He's perfectly competent. The Congress is austere gentlemen and ladies out for the interest of America. Blowing money like they own it. Today, Obama signs a check, $400 million to the Palestinians. You hear this? Where did he get the money from? Who gave him the authority to write that check? Was it debated in Congress? Were the American taxpayers who paid that money asked if they want $400 million to go to the Palestinians? I didn't see the debate. I must have missed it. I must have missed it while I was sleeping last night. Am I living in a democracy, I ask myself every morning? I wake up every morning, I feel like I got to wash myself with brown soap every time I hear a politician speak. I feel like I'm getting hives when I hear them speak. When I hear Obama speak, I feel like I got to take a hot shower. I can't believe he gets away with it. This is the greatest fraud in the history of the world. It's worse than Rothstein fixing the 1919 World Series. It's unbelievable. They fixed an election. They put this guy in. And I wouldn't mind if they put a guy in who could run the show. He can't run the show. All the environmentalists, Your Honor, all of the great Democrat environmentalists who never go out in the wilderness, all of the great environmentalists from the Upper East Side of Manhattan who are afraid of getting poison ivy if they go in the woods, who wouldn't know how to hunt the turkey, but they're great environmentalists. They're all environmentalists. We're sitting here with the greatest environmental disaster in history, and they have nothing to say about Obama being incompetent. That he wouldn't lend the Navy, he wouldn't lend the Army, he wouldn't let the Corps of Engineers, wouldn't let them build sand berms, wouldn't give them permits. And they say, no, he's doing nothing wrong, he's still studying it. Because that's how they did it when he was at Harvard. They studied everything. They studied it, they had meetings, and they had pizza parties and beer blasts, and they still couldn't figure out how to tie a shoe. And then they got the chairman of the Harvard Law Review, they became the editor of the Harvard Law Review, that made them bigger than Einstein. Because they gave him the job. Suddenly he's smarter than Felix Frankfurter because he edited the Harvard Law Review. So, Your Honor, we're living in strange times when a totally incompetent president, a totally incompetent administration, is running America off the rails on a daily basis and nothing happens to change it. They don't even awaken to what they're doing. You know, there was a book called Eyeless in Gaza, which was very interesting, Your Honor. It was written by Aldous Huxley. Many, many, many decades ago, Eyeless in Gaza, and it had biblical references to, although it was a popular a novel, Eyeless in Gaza. And I ask myself, are we eyeless in Gaza today? Have we become blind? Do we not see what's going on? Where evil is called good and good is called evil? Where our own nation, the shining light of the world, is put down by our own president who goes on an apology tour around the world and says, I'm sorry for America's actions. What the hell was he sorry about? He was sorry because we stood up to the medieval troglodytes who would drag us back to the 9th century? He was sorry because the people who would cut your head off would cut your head off? That's what he's sorry for? Where did he get the idea that we're not loved around the world? When the hell did that ever matter? Did you ever care what the Arab street thought of you until Obama came along? When did you ever hear a reference to the words Arab street before? As though that was somehow the zenith of civilization, the Arab street. Have you ever seen how Arabs in the Middle East treat their wives and children? Have you ever been to the Middle East?
and seen how they treat their sons and their daughters? Have any of you ever been there? All of you geniuses, all of you Democrat college degree people, do you have any idea what world you are living in? You're living in a world where they would cut your throat, strip you naked, steal your wife from you, and put your children into slavery unless you had a U.S. military to protect you. But you spend your time hating the U.S. military. You spend your time worrying about what they did to the medieval troglodytes at Guantanamo. They didn't treat them properly. Can you believe it? ILIS in Gaza was nothing compared to what we're living through in the United States of America, Your Honor. I've never seen anything like it. Are they all blind? Are they all deaf and dumb? Do they have any idea what's going on? We know that in the Holocaust, 6 million Jews went to their deaths. Most of them went without firing, without screaming, without yelling, without trying to kill a German. Not all. Some fought. Some fought. Some went underground. Some went into the woods. They're my heroes, Your Honor. But most went like sheep to the slaughter. They didn't leap at the guy, take a gun, and shoot him in the head. I was told by somebody when I was young that when it started, it didn't start that way. It started with the Gestapo coming to the houses quietly and knocking on the doors. And that the people went along quietly because the Germans wanted order. They wanted order in their society. And they didn't want the German neighbors to be upset by what was going on. And the Jews complied. They went along quietly. But I was told that had they not gone along quietly, had they pulled out a gun and shot the Gestapo officers in the face, and if enough of them had done it, in the beginning there would have been the Holocaust. That's what I was told when I was young. And something in me, I don't know, maybe the message was correct, but it did something to me. It did something to me. I don't know how the people in America could be so stupid as to not see that they are like the sheep being lined up to being put in a stockade in this country. I don't mean a stockade with a concentration camp. Don't travel to the extremes of your own paranoia. I mean the stockade that the government is putting you in as a piece of earner. You're just an earner for them. A slave, in other words. They laugh at you every night as they spend your money. Bonnie Frank goes before young Democrats the other day and says, oh, we would like to help you even more. Give us more power. We need more power. Can you believe what you're living through? Can you fathom what you are living through? Give the people more power who have bankrupted the United States of America, who have defaced the United States of America, who have weakened the United States of America, who have weakened our allies, who have weakened the military, who have weakened our laws. Give them more power. This band of incompetent left-wing gangsters, give them more power? So, Your Honor, in conclusion, in summary, I would like to say that no, we are not all eyeless in Gaza. Your Honor, some of us can see quite clearly what is coming, and we're quite prepared, and I rest my case.
Savage. Do bop to do. Boom, 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 boom.
Do, bop, do, boom, 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 boom.
I'll always want you because my heart is true. Come closer, and I'll tell you of the ABCs.
So here we're living in the greatest of times, despite the hard times. They're not really that hard compared to what your grandmother went through. They're nothing compared to what your grandmother went through. But we're screaming, oh, I got to give up the vacation house. I can only go to Disneyland 5 times this year instead of 4. I lost my vacation house. I don't know what I'm going to do. I can only eat out 17 times a week, not 33. And the medieval troglodytes are at the gates. We're inviting them in by the tons, bringing them in order to make America more diverse. More medieval troglodytes come in with have 15, 16 children on welfare. Half of them revert to the cutthroats, and we don't know how it happened. Shocked that they go back to Somalia. Oh, we're shocked when it happens. No, we just don't know how it happened. Can't figure it out. Government can't figure it out. The answer to the government, of course, is to bring more of them in. Instead of bringing less of them in, bring in more. You got the illegal aliens swarming across Arizona, whacking sheriffs, killing ranchers, destroying the environment. And so the people say, the hell with you. You're not going to do it. We'll do it ourselves. What is the government's answer? Bring more of them in. No, don't bring less of it in. We'll help you. The answer would have been, you know what? You guys are right. You're leading the government. Because when the government will lead the people, will lead the government. So the people lead the government. So the morons from Harvard, instead of saying, you know, these people are right. The morons and idiots from Harvard, instead of saying they're right, we're going to sue the people of Arizona for defending themselves. Because they're racist.
Then right away, they have the answer. Immediately, they pull out the gun. Bang, the cap gun. Racist! They learned it in Harvard. They learned how to get ahead. Me sue. ACLU. I get ahead. Me sue. ACLU. I get ahead. Marvin, the lawyer, has lined up with the lawsuit already. Right away, the lawsuit. The Gulf oil spill, the worst environmental disaster in history. Obama don't know what the hell to do. Eric Holder don't know what the hell to do. They don't know what the hell. They're going to sue. They're going to sue. That's their answer to everything. Why? Because they're lawyers from Harvard. They got into Harvard by threatening to sue. They got ahead in Harvard by threatening to sue, real or imagined. So what do they do now that they're in office? They sit there. What the hell do we do? What do we do now? What do we do now, Eric? Sue, sue. Let's sue them. But the oil's still coming out of the ground. It don't matter. We're going to sue BP. That's all. Sue. Get the lawsuits. Call Harvard. Sue them. That's what we'll do, is we'll sue. The oil's still gushing. No thought of the consequences of what the suing of BP means. The people who are being affected by the oil spill are begging them not to destroy BP because it's the biggest employer of the whole area. That they'll decimate the entire state if they sue BP and destroy the company. That doesn't stop Obama, because that's how he got where he is. He's single-minded in his pursuit of the lawsuit. Single-minded in his pursuit of the lawsuit is the answer to all problems. It's the bomb of the ages, the lawsuit. Whatever ails you, sue. You got cancer? Sue someone for an imaginary disease called hock me, schmock me, and pock me. You see these TV ads. Mesolithine, did you work in the shipyards? Did you build America's Navy? Well, you're mesolithine, you call Heinstein, Reinstein, and Beinstein, and Beinstein, and we'll sue on your behalf because you suffered. You did your job, but we're going to sue on your behalf. Heinstein, Beinstein, Reinstein, and Beinstein. I'd throw them all in jail. You give me the power, I'd strip them like Rothstein. I'd strip them of every penny they ever made on a class action lawsuit. I'd throw those bastards into a jail cell, and I'd strip their family of every dime. Every class action lawyer I'd throw into a jail cell. They never did an honest day's work in their life. You talk about gangsters. What this guy Michael did is nothing compared to those gangsters with law degrees. They rip companies to pieces. Companies that spend their life building something, these vermin with law degrees rip the companies to shreds, never having produced a screw that anybody could use. A pin they never produced. Heinstein, Beinstein, Reinstein, and Beinstein. That's all they know. Sue, sue, sue. And so what we get a lawyer who they put in power. Yes, they were part of it. Do you remember how the American Trial Lawyers Association hated George Bush because he even said the words tort reform? All the tarts with law degrees went crazy. Tort reform, we can't have that. We've never had it so good. We don't work and we make billions of dollars. People build up companies and we tear them apart. What could be better? We can't have any tort reform. Look how well we're doing. So they put in Obama, a man who understands their way of thinking. And here we are. Worst environmental disaster in history. He's going to sue BP. Instead of saying we're going to help BP stop the leak. Instead of saying we're going to help stop the oil, we're going to sue BP. That's, we're going to spend all of our genius figuring out the lawsuit. Instead of helping the people of Arizona stop the tide of drugs and the other scourge that's running over the land, we're going to sue the people of Arizona because that's what we know how to do. I read this morning that 100,000 illegal aliens have left Arizona since the law was passed because they're afraid of the law taking effect in July. So you ask them, where are they going? They're, oh, we're going to go where it's friendlier. Where we're not as afraid. Where's that California? Hey, isn't that great? Just what the state needed. We got loads of money waiting for them. Oh, bring more of them in. We got social services for them. Oh, yeah, thanks to Barbara Boxer, we have more social services than you can imagine. The state's broke. Broke like a bum on the Bowery with no shoes. The state's broke like a bum on a Bowery after Arnold Schwarzenegger got through with us. The man who was going to save us, Mr. Steroid. Mr. Steroid was going to save us. And the minute he comes to power, he does exactly what the predecessor did. I don't even blame him. He never should have taken the job. I don't know why these people want the job. If you can't change the system, then don't take the job. If you can't change the system, then take the job and change the system. But they can't do anything. So, ladies and gentlemen, I rest my case. We've had a wonderful time thus far in the Savage Nation. Another big hour coming. It's the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere. Go to michaelsavage.com for all the stories you have heard today.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content,
psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation, we went to talk about the Roaring Twenties, the excesses of the Roaring Twenties, particularly, you know, The Great Gatsby by a great writer, F. Scott Fitzgerald. And because today there's a story in the Miami Herald that I couldn't stop looking at, I try to reject it. It was about a Ponzi scheme of Scott Rothstein, who was given a 50-year sentence for having been convicted of running a $1.2 billion investment scam. What's interesting about the case is that the prosecutors asked for 40 years, but the judge gave him 50 years. The judge was U.S. District Judge James Cone, an Alabama native brought into Florida, but he was appointed by Bush, and it threw the man an extra 10 years. "I am truly deeply sorry for what I have done," Rothstein said, addressing the court wearing cuffs on his wrists and ankles. "I don't expect your forgiveness." Well, no kidding. This was a man who was convicted of running a $1.2 billion investment scam, and he pled guilty. He spilled his guts to the feds. He started an FBI sting that also brought down a reputed Italian mafia figure. This man was known in South Florida as a one-man wrecking ball, who not only destroyed his own life and the lives of his family, but destroyed his own 70-attorney law firm, Rothstein, Rosenfeld, Adler. And what did he do with the money? Well, the usual. Rolls Royces, Ferraris, Lamborghinis, 5 waterfront estates, hobnobbing with governors and politicians like Charlie Crist. And the fact of the matter is, he was born into no money in the Bronx. And here he ends up like this. And it led us to a lot of questions. How do people wind up like this with such incredible self-assurance that they would never get caught? It's unbelievable. And it led us to a lot of deep questions about things of that nature, The Great Gatsby. And we talked about the man who fixed the World Series of 1919. And I remember that. I remember, of course, that the World Series had been fixed in 1919. But if I had thought of it at all, I would have thought of it as a thing that merely happened, the end of some chain. I never thought that one man could play with the faith of 50 million people. Now, that comes from The Great Gatsby. And then someone asks in the book, how did he happen to do that? He just saw the opportunity. I'm talking about fixing the World Series in 1919. And then the character says, well, why isn't he in jail? And the answer is, they can't get him. Old sport, he's a smart man. Well, in this case, they got the old sport, Scott Rothstein. And it leads us to the collapse of our civilization, where I asked myself, where are the giants of today? Where are the giants in science? Can you name one? Where are the giants in medicine? Can you name one? Where are the giants in even legal jurisprudence? Can you name one? Can you name a Felix Frankfurter? I can't. Where are the giants in any race or religion today, whether it be Jewish, Muslim, Christian, Buddhist? Tell me where they are. Is civilization finished? And what did it? What has brought us to this sad state where there are no giants that we know of? Well, perhaps giants in the sports field, yes. But I'm talking about of the human spirit, of the human mind, of the human soul. I don't know where they are, and where have they gone? And then we talked about questions of the day, because there was a great, great story today. Actually, it was an editorial by Dorothy Rabinowitz of the Wall Street Journal calling Obama the alien in the White House. And we asked, do you feel Obama identifies with America? She doesn't. She asked, where do you suspect Obama's true loyalties lie? No one knows. Then Hillary is on a Hate America tour in South America, in Uruguay, of all places, telling the South American wealthy that they should pay their fair share. Then she says it's not class warfare. Why do you think Hillary has gone to South America at this moment to start her class warfare act and call for the international redistribution of wealth? Was her statement a calculated move by Obama, or is this part of Hillary's own plan to overthrow Obama? I also cited a USA Today report that illegal aliens, Hispanics, are fleeing Arizona ahead of the new immigration law taking effect on July 29th. And I asked, what do you think will happen to Arizona's crime rate and economy a year from now? We then reported that the Taliban are using HIV bombs. They're using hypodermic needles with HIV in them and hepatitis that they put in the ground next to IEDs so that when our men go to defuse the bombs, they get AIDS or hepatitis. And the people are asking, how low can a religion go? How low can a people go? And what kind of attack do you fear terrorists in the U.S. will use next? Amazing stories. Now, those are sort of negative in a way. They really are. But there were quite a few positive stories. Women, Republican women, dominated the elections. Meg Whitman won the Republican nomination, spending her own fortune to do so. The founder of eBay. And it seems to me she's going to beat Jerry Brown by 20 points. Now, Jerry Brown has the unions. Jerry Brown has the radicals. Jerry Brown has the illegal aliens. But Whitman is so appealing. She is so ebullient, so alive, and has so much to offer. I expect moderate Republicanism from her once she wins. There's no question she's not going to be the conservative that we're all hoping for, but she's going to be far better in terms of the fact that she is a businesswoman who built her own business without the government's help. I believe she should be the next governor of California, and I believe that she could be the president of the United States eventually. The person who should most fear Whitman is not only Jerry Brown, but it would be Hillary Clinton, frankly. This one is a real winner. On the Senate side, Fiorina won the Republican primary. She's going to challenge Barbara Boxer in the election. I think Fiorina is going to win hands down. People don't want the old hacks anymore. And over in Nevada, the GOP picked a Nevada Tea Party candidate who will go up against Reid. People are saying he will win. I'm not so sure. So this was a huge sea change in politics, all because of Obama's failures and the corruption around him. Truthfully, it's a new day in America. This is the Savage Nation. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. This is the Savage Nation. Well, the doctor is in and the diagnosis is clear. Liberalism is a mental disorder. So let's continue to diagnose the mental disorder together today. Joining us now with an exclusive update is Jack Hunter.
Well, yesterday was a big triumph, unquestionably, for conservatives in general. Our prospects, things are getting better. Let's take a look first. The Sharon Angle situation in Nevada, obviously the Tea Party candidate for that race. One, it was the outsider came in. People are now saying, well, Sharon is a little too far to the right. Miss Angle is. That's what they said about Rand Paul in Kentucky. That was a big win. Of course, it's of interest that Meg Whitman in your own state of California is, you know, a very contentious race there. Carly Fiorina is facing Senator Bobbert Boxer. That's a big deal. A lot of people have been having this narrative out there that it's women that are sort of taking over, and I guess that's true and healthy in many respects, but it's a certain kind of candidate, which brings me to my own state of South Carolina, and we're talking about gubernatorial candidate Nikki Haley. You've seen Nikki Haley on CNN and Fox and MSNBC and all the big cable news outlets. She was on Good Morning America. And the governor's race in South Carolina, it is a microcosm of what's happening nationally with all these candidates in the different primaries as it relates to the genuine real deal conservatives running for office and the same old conventional Republicans who might talk a good game, who certainly describe themselves as conservative Republicans, but are anything but. It's all rhetorical.
Well, explain what you mean by that.
before our governor, Mark Sanford, in this state was sort of disgraced the state and his family with this whole sex scandal with the Argentinian mistress. And we all know the late night jokes about hiking on the Appalachian Trail. And of course, he was caught, you know, involved in adultery, this, that, and the other. He first made headlines. Governor Sanford made headlines everywhere by opposing Barack Obama's federal stimulus dollars. For the state of South Carolina, that was about $700 million that was going to go to the state's unemployed. Now, at the time, Governor Sanford argued, if we take Obama's money, if we take the stimulus, not only are we not fixing the unemployment situation here in South Carolina, but we'll have a greater debt. We're throwing bad money on top of bad money. We'll have a greater debt. Well, most of the Republicans in this state called Mark Sanford heartless. He was cruel. I can't believe you're doing this, and yet Sanford was a hero to conservatives across the country, looking for somebody to take a hardline conservative stance. Fast forward 2 years, we have a governor's race right now, where there's four candidates vying for governor, three men and one woman, and the only person who says they would have stood by the stimulus stance that Sanford took is the woman. In a gubernatorial debate, each candidate was asked point blank, who would have rejected the stimulus dollars? Only Nikki Haley said that. The three other candidates had the same narrative of every Republican in this state and many of the conventional Republicans on Capitol Hill and throughout the nation. Well, you have to accept the money and go along, get along. Only she was willing to take that hardcore conservative stance.
Well, why is that important?
Now, why that is noteworthy and why South Carolina is a microcosm of what's happening with conservatives and the Republican Party across the country is that Mark Sanford was not liked by any Republicans in this state. Virtually no Republican liked him because they were used to being unaccountable in state government, irresponsible with people's money, and he called them on it. He was going to fight it. Along comes Nikki Haley, who many consider the handpicked successor to Mark Sanford. Since the day she stepped foot in state government in South Carolina, she's been hated and despised by the same Republicans. We expect Democrats not to like it, but the same Republicans. She's fought them tooth and nail, demanded transparency in government, stood by Mark Sanford on the stimulus, and is following along with the same platform. Well, what we have here yesterday with the primaries, the good old boy network, which is what we call in South Carolina, which is shorthand for basically your conventional old convention, you know, same old status quo Republican. They all opposed her and they lost in that race. Her three opponents, the conventional Republicans who said they were conservative, but they would have accepted the stimulus money, who say they're conservative but have spent as much money. One of them's a congressman who supported TARP. One is a lieutenant governor who spent all sorts of money, who say they're conservative across the board but don't have the record to show it. In contrast to Nikki Haley, who had 49% of the vote in a four-way race. She was considered the Tea Party candidate, much like Sharon Angle in Nevada. She was considered the independence candidate, who wanted something a little different from the average bear when it comes to Republican politics. Long story short, there have been Republicans who have run for office in this country for forever, saying, I'm a conservative Republican. They might say the right things about gay marriage or say they like guns more than the Democratic candidate. But once they get on Capitol Hill, state government, you name it, they spend as much as any liberal Democrat. With a person like Nikki Haley, who's perceived as the genuine article, getting 49%, what that tells me and what that tells voters across the nation is that voters are finally seeing a difference between those who will talk the talk and those who will walk the walk, those who say they're conservative and those who mean it. And what's significant about that, in the past, any conservative Republican could say they're conservative, skate through the election, it's fine, and they're sort of given a pass because they have a big fat R by their name. Now we're seeing genuine, real-deal conservatives, and doing no small part to the Tea Parties, who are being propelled into the national spotlight, as you saw with Nikki Haley this week, Rand Paul 2 weeks ago, Sharon Angle in Nevada, and it's very interesting to see how this all plays out and very encouraging for conservatives.
Well, what do you think is happening now?
Just to give you an example of how scared the good old boy network, the conventional Republicans are, the Republican status quo, of course, with Rand Paul in Kentucky, when that race was going on, you had guys like Dick Cheney and Mitch McConnell and Rudy Giuliani lining up behind Rand's opponent. Well, here in South Carolina, it got a lot dirtier, which is characteristic of South Carolina politics. Nikki Haley was accused of being in a sex scandal. She was accused by two Republican operatives who had speculated was working for the other candidates, saying there was infidelity there and sort of trying to tar her along with Mark Sanford in a light not fiscal conservatism, but the sort of the sex scandal stuff, it did not stick. In fact, it helped her. If you asked a majority of voters who voted for Nikki Haley, 49% overwhelmingly in this latest race, it emboldened them. Once again, people are seeing through the old tricks. Those guys who accused her of being involved in infidelity never came up with any evidence at all.
Mm-hmm.
It emboldens voters, and people are finally seeing through the BS, quite frankly, reading between the lines. It's a good day for America, and better yet, a good day for conservatives who are tired of people just mouthing all the right things and not getting anything done.
Exactly.
This could also make a difference in presidential politics. You know, a lot of us conservatives get disheartened in any – John McCain's a good example that he's the nominee. And a lot of that has to do with my state of South Carolina. You know, New Hampshire's the first primary. And then you have South Carolina, which Lee Atwater, back in the late Reagan days, the Bush days, Bush the first, I mean, was sort of a firewall for these establishment candidates because the Republican National Committee, the status quo, you know, the conventional Republicans and South Carolina were in sync with each other. Imagine if we have a renegade Tea Party type conservative presidential candidate in 2012 that kick butt in New Hampshire, which is certainly feasible in the live free or die state, in South Carolina, a party that is more Nikki Haley than it is John McCain. That could really turn around a presidential election. That should be encouraging to conservatives on so many levels, particularly when it comes to presidential prospects. Very encouraging.
Yeah, but will the phony Republicans actually let that go on or happen?
Well, that's a very good question because that's exactly what they would try to do. That's what they've always – and I'm not saying that the election of this one woman and it looks like she probably will by all rights become governor will change everything. But there is a trickle-down effect when it comes to politics. When Reagan was president, it was Reagan's Republican Party. When Barack Obama is the president, it is his Democratic Party. Same with Bill Clinton, George W. Bush. In this state, Republican politics in South Carolina, it is Governor Mark Sanford's Republican Party as far as the rank and file are concerned. They're behind him. Nikki Haley is the same dynamic, and they may be able to circumvent those same old status quo Republicans who just want to get their establishment candidate in there. So, yes, it is possible.
Thanks for the report, Jack.
Well, it's good to be with you. And if you want to learn about this and more, I encourage you to visit SouthernAvenger.com.
Savage.
There are many ongoing crises that Obama's not just measuring up to. The oil spill is destroying the Gulf. There is a war going on in Afghanistan for a reason nobody knows. Our budget problems are only getting worse and worse and worse. Joining us now is Tad DeHaven, who is a budget analyst for the Cato Institute, who says in a recent article, the time is now to get serious about the budget problems. Tad DeHaven, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. It's great to be with you, and I appreciate you having me on the show. Well, what you have and have had is a lot of blaming going on in Washington between the two parties. And when President Obama took office, he inherited a large national debt, rising deficits, and he pointed to the Bush administration for having put him in that position. He was correct in that regard. However, so far, President Obama has basically been President Bush on steroids. And so now, as we're 2 years out, we have multi-trillion dollar deficits. Publicly held debt is heading towards $10 trillion. You see what's going on in Europe with Greece and Spain and other countries, their problems, and we're headed in that direction. And so the reason why I wrote this piece was I wanted to point out that the time's over for the blame game.
Well, looking at the two parties, what hope do the taxpayers really have? Are any of them going to stop the spending?
With the Democrats, who continue to pass these so-called economic stimulus bills, which have been an abject failure, I don't see us having any hope. With the Republicans, there's talk. They say no. They vote against a lot of these spending plans. But they're not formulating for the public, and I think a public that's hungry for answers and an understanding of why this spending isn't good. Republicans aren't doing a sufficient job of coming out and saying why we don't need these government programs, why we don't need these stimulus packages. Often Republicans say, well, we need to find cuts elsewhere before we spend more money. For instance, unemployment insurance. Republicans say that, well, before we pass another extension of unemployment benefits, they need to be paid for. That's almost not the issue.
Well, what is the issue then?
The issue is that unemployment benefits help increase unemployment. And that's the argument that Republicans should be making. There are a few folks in the rank and file, I point out in my piece, Senator Tom Coburn, and who I worked for a couple years. You have a couple folks in the House, certainly Ron Paul and Paul Ryan, who are trying to take a bigger look at the long-term picture of federal budgets, debt, and spending. And the Republican leadership, which what I would consider to be very stale, and guys that were there in this past decade who were part of the problem, part of the big spending Republican Congress with the Bush administration, they're very limited ideas thus far. They recently have this U-Cut website, which is a good idea. It gets citizens involved in trying to cut spending.
Well, how does that work?
Each week, the Republican House leadership comes up with five possibilities. People can vote on it. But so far, the cuts have been pretty minuscule. And I cite, as an example, the leadership put up for cutting mohair subsidies, about $1 million a year. Now, mohair subsidies were once cut, then they came back. They were created in the 1950s to help stimulate the production of warmer materials for the troops in Korea. It's a ridiculous item. It needs to go. But if Republicans are really serious about clamping down on ag subsidies, why not go after the big ones, the corn, wheat, things of that nature, things that actually put a dent in federal spending and sort of get to the underlying problem with these programs to begin with, whether it's wool hair or rice or cotton or what have you. And see, the problem is Republicans are just as concerned as the Democrats are about offending the special interests and taking away that slice of the pie and hindering potential votes. Because let's face it, the American people, whether they want to admit it or recognize it, are very addicted to federal spending.
Mm-hmm.
We have a new website as an adjunct of the Cato Institute called downsizinggovernment.org.
What does it do?
What downsizinggovernment.org does is it goes through each department and comes up with a list of programs to cut. It has essays explaining why you should have these cuts, charts, graphs. We also have essays on principles of reform. For instance, we have a new essay on how federal employees are overpaid. And the reason why we're producing this and putting this information out there is to help the American people get a better understanding of how their government spends money. The government's spending about $4 trillion a year, and it's almost impossible. I do budget policy for a living, and I can barely keep track of all this stuff. But what we want to do is we want to get these tools in the hands of folks so that they're educated, so they understand that we don't need these programs, that these programs aren't good, so that they'll take this information and contact their legislator, Democrat, Republican, it doesn't matter, and say, I don't want this program. I don't need this program. We need to get rid of this stuff. And I think by educating ourselves, that's our best hope for reining in Washington, because having worked in Washington, I can tell you right now, the only people that the politicians in Washington really listen to are the various special interest groups that have their ear, that ask for these programs and new programs and extensions of programs. And it's time for taxpayers to make their voices be heard.
Are there any signs that things are going to get better?
From the Democrat side, I see absolutely no signs. From the Republican side, I see very tiny signs. And you need to see more from the leadership of the Republican Party. The problem with the Republicans is they lost all credibility in this past decade when it came to spending. The president teamed up with the GOP Congress to be one of the biggest spending regimes we've seen in this country since its inception. The only way that they can regain any sort of credibility is to make serious proposals to rein in spending. And, you know, we're headed off a fiscal cliff. I don't think anybody on the ideological spectrum will deny that we have a long-term budget problem, which is largely being driven by entitlement programs, Medicare, Social Security, Medicaid. So what's this administration done? It's furthered the government's role in health care. But what did the previous administration do? Well, the previous administration, the Bush administration, gave us the unfunded prescription drug program for Medicare. And so that's the conversation we need to be having, but they're afraid to upset seniors. They're afraid to upset all these beneficiaries.
What do you think they should do?
Somebody has to have the guts to stand up and say, look, 20, 30, 40 years from now, we're going to be leaving our grandchildren and their kids, or even our children, an absolute fiscal calamity and a reduced standard of living, also that we could take care of our own selves. And it's the ultimate in selfishness. And quite frankly, we need a reversal of the growth of the 20th century welfare state. And we should look at Europe.
Why do you say that?
Because Europe is going to be forced to confront their welfare states because they're simply out of money. And that's the direction we're headed. You can't just tax the rich. You can't just tax people. All that does is inhibit economic growth. And quite frankly, even if you just tax the rich, as some think is such an easy solution, it's not that much money. And so we need bigger picture, bolder ideas. And thus far, I don't see much coming from the Republicans, and I certainly see absolutely nothing coming from the Democrats.
Where can we read more?
Our downsizinggovernment.org website. I think there's some wonderful utilities there. I've spoken to different groups. I've spoken to some Tea Parties, and everybody's upset about deficits and spending, but they're not quite sure what to do about it. And that's why we do the work we do, is to help get them this information so they can sort of spread the word and put some pressure on Washington where it needs to be.
Tad DeHaven, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thank you again for having me on the show, Dr. Savage.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
In the long run, the only real way to solve this problem is to make sure that we've got a Palestinian state side by side with an Israel that is secure. And so we're going to be dealing with these short-term problems, but we also have to keep our eye on the horizon and recognize that it's that long-term issue that has to be focused on.
All right, here are some other news stories on the Savage Nation. Obama's agreed to give the Palestinians $400 million of your money in aid. Let me repeat that. Barack Hussein Obama has today unveiled a $400 million aid package to the Palestinians. Just write the check. After all, it's his money. The drunken president doesn't understand the first thing about balancing a check. He's never had to balance a checkbook. Right? Everything was given to him. So, hey, write a check to the Palestinians. They may love him for it. And they could always build more bombs with it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Did you hear the one about the FBI and Joran von der Slut? Did you hear that he used their money? They gave him money on a sting. He was trying to extort the Holloways. He collected money from them, FBI money. He then used the money to go to South America where he killed a girl. Oh, yeah. Yep, the new FBI under Barack Hussein Obama. It's unbelievable wherever you turn. I've never seen anything like this. The alien in the White House, Barry Vinovich, says it all. I mean, the man can't stop Iran from developing a bomb. He said the UN resolution against Iran is like a used handkerchief. That's Ahmadinejad, not Obama. They're not going to stop uranium enrichment. And our military sits here wringing their hands, giving out berthing notices to the U.S. Navy. And, oh, by the way, the oil is still pumping into the waters of the Gulf. FBI paid money in Vander Sloot's sting. It's astounding. We'll keep talking about this and other topics on the show today, but let's stop for a minute. I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent, conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. Well, the primaries are over in California, and Republican Meg Whitman will be taking on Jerry Brown for governor.
Jerry Brown has spent a lifetime in politics, and the results have not been good. Failure seems to follow Jerry Brown everywhere he goes. It's a record of promising much and delivering little, of saying one thing and doing quite another, with disastrous results. For jobs, during Jerry Brown's last term as governor, California's unemployment rate nearly doubled to a then-record 11%.
Not such a great record, Mr. Brown.
For spending, while Jerry was governor, state spending went up by 120%. He raised taxes and still left a billion-dollar budget deficit. And for education, with Jerry as mayor, Oakland schools deteriorated to the point that the state had to intervene. Overall, a record of higher and higher taxes, more and more spending, and near record unemployment. In other words, a 40-year record of politics as usual. I say California can do better.
And of course, if you'll remember, Jerry Brown came on this show and said he wanted state control of the media. Remember that one? Listen.
People listen to NPR probably don't want to listen to you. So, I mean, that's just the way the world is. There's different
I understand views. That, right? So they have a right to tune in what they want to listen to. That's exactly our defense, which is that we made it in radio because there's an audience for us. Because they can't find it on TV, they can't find it in most of the cable channels, but they can find it in AM radio where they run conservative talk. So that's why we say let the marketplace determine what people listen to, not the government. But I don't know exactly where you stand on that. You're starting to sound as though you want a little state control over the media.
Well, a little state control wouldn't hurt anybody.
Meanwhile, while Obama's making excuses for his failure in the Gulf of Mexico, he's telling high school students not to follow his example.
Don't make excuses. Take responsibility not just for your successes. Take responsibility where you fall short as well. But you're not going to ace every class. You're not going to succeed the first time you try something. There are going to be times when you screw up. There'll be times where you hurt people you love. There'll be times where you make a mistake and you stray from the values that you hold most deeply. And when that happens, it's the easiest thing in the world to start looking around for somebody else to blame. Your professor was too hard. Your boss was a jerk. The coaches was playing favorites. Your friend just didn't understand. Your wife.
And Obama's still, consorting with the Palestinians.
President Abbas and I spent most of our time discussing how do we solve the problem. One of the things that we see is that so often rhetoric when it comes to issues in the Middle East outstrip actually solving issues. And our conversation was focused on how do we actually allow more goods, more services into Gaza? How do we allow businesses to thrive? How can we get construction moving? How can we put people to work in Gaza?
Is he president of the United States or president of the West Bank? Nobody seems to know. Now, I'm going to go over to michaelsavage.com where I post about 20 stories a day. There's hundreds of stories a day. Number one, Hillary plays class warfare, raised taxes on the rich, she says, while in South America. What is she running for now? Or what is she running from now? The alien in the White House from the Wall Street Journal. Tea Party pick will face Reid. Reuters admits cropping photos of ship clash to make the Jews look bad. You'd expect that from the descendants of Hitler? I wouldn't. No. Reuters, Uber alles. 1 million people could lose health coverage this year, thanks to Nancy Pelosi. Employer groups say the ban could essentially wipe out a niche insurance market that many part-time workers and retail and restaurant employees have come to rely on. Thank you, Obama. There are other stories on MichaelSavage.com. Let's go to the bottom. FBI cash-funded shoot slay trip. Bill Clinton calls Senator Vitter a sinner in a fundraising letter. It's unbelievable to me, the stuff that you see in the news. I find it so fascinating. Woman struck by lightning moments before boyfriend planned to propose. MichaelSavage.com has the $400 million in aid to Palestinians from Obama. That's right. Obama poses with Abbas, but not with Netanyahu. Obama would not allow any photos taken of him with Prime Minister Netanyahu when he came to the White House for a visit in March, but plenty with Abbas. Go ahead, keep voting for him. Amish man accused of sex crimes with children. Even they're tainted now.
Jesus.
ICE to make detention centers more humane. They're going to offer art classes, bingo, and continental breakfast on the weekend. You hear? The illegals. I'm not making this up.
And salsa dancing, no doubt.
Evangelical leaders make D.C. push on immigration. They now want illegal immigrants to get amnesty. Did you read that, Beowulf? You're not going to believe it.
Oh, God. Yeah.
All of the religious establishment want the illegals to be granted amnesty. All of them. They're dying for hot bodies in the pews. Which, of course, is why the seats have an apt name.
Reform Judaism, the social justice movement in Christianity, it's killing the soul of our cultures.
Well, I don't know how to put it. You probably put it in as best way possible. Savage.